Blog Talk Radio.
Here's your chance to take your martial arts to the next level. Train with the masters August 11th through 13th.
Aloha, everyone. Welcome to the Masters Pioneers Radio Blog, AMMA. We're so excited about being in your home tonight and sharing sport karate as you've let us do this for many, many weeks now. My name is Professor Gary Lee, and I'm your host for these interviews that we do called Parts Unknown. Now, we just know through the interviews with people from the pioneers of sport karate, we talk about upcoming events, we talk about past events. We got different formats, and we got different segments of the show that we do for the listeners that come in and tune with us. Tonight we have a very special guest, as always, we always do. Tonight our special guest is someone who trains in Wushu martial arts, known competitor throughout the country, and we'll be bringing him on just in a little while. But before we do, I'd like to do a couple of good shout-outs to people. You know, this weekend is coming up at the end of the year, and we have various state finals around the country, but particularly one of my favorites is the state finals and championship of the TKO, which is November the 18th in Galveston, Texas, this weekend at the beautiful Convention Center. This is hosted by Mr. Wayne Nguyen, better known as the White Ninja in Sidekicks, the movie. That was the last movie that Mr. Norris did. Wayne is an instructor for Kickstart, owns a karate studio, and has formed the TKO organization, the Karate Texas Karate Organization, into something of a mainstay in sport karate. Has a large following and has an annual state championship this weekend in Galveston. And we will be there. We'll have a booth, and some of the top competitors in the state of Texas will work for a TKO beautiful championship ring, state championship ring. So if you're in the Galveston area or Houston area, please stop by the Convention Center on the seawall, and check out the TKO state finals. You know, we're going to start something new this week, this show, and it's called the Big Shout Out, where we talk about one particular school that will be able to send in their information, and we'll actually talk about your school on the air. So if you're interested in doing that, you can contact us at ProfessorGaryLee@gmail.com or 713-483-0476. And I just need a bio of your school, where you're located, how long you've been teaching, what do you teach, what do you offer, who do you teach, maybe a little bit about yourself, and we'll do a plug for your school every week on the show, and we'll do a show every Tuesday. So that's four times a month we'll be actually be able to advertise your school for you, and there's no cost involved. We just want to help the individual school owners out there to get the word out there, what you teach and what you offer, and we'd love to hear from you. Again, that's ProfessorGaryLee@gmail.com or call us directly at 713-483-0476. Before I get to my special guest tonight, there's one more thing that I'm really excited about, and I just got approval on it tonight from my producer, Hansi Jesse Bowen, who, by the way, if you don't know who he is, you've been living in a hole somewhere. He's the publisher and responsible for bringing up the Who's Who in the martial arts. And this is the book is kind of like the heart of this program, and it features so many different people and the stories of martial artists around the country. You know, we're growing. This is Tali Bum. We're coming up on our 100th interview here pretty soon, and now we have Karen Eden Herdman, an inspirational speaker and motivational speaker. A writer, author. She has her own show. And, of course, the motivational shows of Hansi Jesse Bowen and his mindfulness and his insight into the mindset of Zen. And also, of course, the network, the AMMA radio network, which is 24/7. Music, rhythm, blues, gospel music, rock, country, inspirational speakers, Tony Robbins, Lawrence Arthur, Joe Quarley. Imagine a network totally dedicated to martial arts and just making you smarter and have fun listening to it. How would that work for that? Isn't that incredible? Well, right now there's a job opening for that. We're looking for someone to step up and to sell advertising for what I just talked about. That means actually be selling advertising for the Sport Carter Museum and for the radio network and for the Who's Who in Martial Arts. And it's an opportunity. And for more information, you can contact Hansi Jesse Bowen through Facebook or through this radio program, or call me directly at 713-483-0476. If you have sales experience, outside sales experience, that's a big added plus. But we're just looking at people that really enjoy the history of martial arts and understand and keeping that in tune in what we're looking for in the future. We're going to take care of anyone that we decide that deserves that position. And we're looking for a few good people. So please call us and tell us if you're interested in getting involved with that. Our tonight's guest is someone very special in my history, for I do have history with him. We actually competed against each other back in the 80s. And he's one of those gentlemen that actually started out in Taekwondo, but went on to be, and as of known now, is a Wushu stylist and a champion in Wushu competition. And I'm talking about Sifu Robert Hartfield. Now, Sifu Robert Hartfield is from Dallas, Texas. And he has a really unique history, when we're going to talk about that tonight. And I'm very honored to have him on tonight and to talk a little bit about Texas karate and his training with Chinese masters and some of the adversities that he's gone through, such as a car accident, and also competing against competitors that maybe didn't have his winning in mind. And we'll talk a little bit about that. So with that said, I'd like to bring on Sifu Robert Hartfield. Robert, are you there, buddy?
I'm here.
Hey, welcome to the AMAA Masters Radio and Pioneer Show. And I thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for letting me ask you the hard questions. You know, appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, Robert, you know, you're a Dallas boy, correct? You're born in Texas, born in Dallas.
I
keep making that mistake. I'm so sorry. Yeah, you're from Chicago.
Yeah.
I remember now. Yeah. Have you been training martial arts in Chicago too?
Say that again.
Did you train martial arts in Chicago, or was it just Texas?
No, in Chicago. I started in Chicago.
Oh, who did you train with in Chicago? Who did you start with?
Well, Talona used to be up in Chicago. He was up there with Tahari. That's why I first met Tahari Cassell.
Yeah.
And those guys had they branch of martial arts over there. Everybody know Tahari. He's very prolific in his art form, very smooth, very charismatic and stuff. And, you know, I got to working out with those guys.
It's an African style, correct? It's an African style, correct?
Yes, it is.
African style
of martial arts. Yes, it is. Very similar with Wushu characteristics, believe it or not.
Okay, cool.
Yes.
Now, when you moved from Chicago, what year was that?
Let me give a quick history so we don't dwell on that. My parents are native Texans. I was born in Chicago, then I migrated and came back to Texas probably when I was around about maybe 8-9 years old. Then I got involved into the Taekwondo arts, and I pursued it, you know, for many years and stuff. I got up the rank to 6th degree, and then I experienced a Kung Fu exhibition out in California with Master Johnny Lee and some of the well-known martial artists at that time, like Han that played in the movie End of the Dragon and stuff, Eric Lee, Leo T. Fong, all that had a big Chinese expo, and I was blown away by some of the feats they was doing, the smoothness of the katas and the forms and some of the things they was doing. I was really interested in that. And I told him I wanted, and I approached Master Lee at that time, and I asked him, I said, hey, can I study with you? And his first words that he told me was no. I said, well, why? He said, you need to clear that with your present instructor and stuff. It's a, I said, I don't. Why would I need to clear it with him and stuff? If I want to train, he said, it's a matter of respect. So, and then once we got those particulars out the way, then I moved on with Master Johnny Lee and stuff in Mahjong, which is a northern style of kung fu, very powerful, very explosive kicks and stuff. Again, similar to the Wusu characteristics and stuff. And then
well,
I got involved with him.
I'm very close to Johnny Lee. I know Johnny very well. And I remember he used to do all the dragon dances for opening of tournaments and grand championship tournaments. He would come out with his dragon and costumes and do the famous dragon dances. And, of course, his performances of Kung Fu were just spectacular. And
yeah, he was.
So how long did you train
really
with Johnny Lee? How long were you with Johnny?
Oh, man, I still train
with Johnny.
I still train with Master Lee and stuff. I've never have stopped and stuff.
Yeah.
I've been with him about two years ago.
Yeah.
I've been training with Mr. Lee since I was in my early, I said late 20s up to present and stuff. I go see Sifu all the time up in Dallas. You know, he's got a school up in the Richardson area.
Right. Now, he's originally from Louisiana, correctly? Right?
He's originally from Louisiana, but he's from mainland China.
Okay, right. Yeah, he's a real deal. He's amazing. Yeah, he really is.
Oh, yeah,
now you're a kung fu and you're getting involved with Wushu. Now, here's a difference. My listeners who are probably, you know, you're kung fu and karate people, but just for my sake and everybody else's sake who don't know, which I really do know, but I don't know. The difference between kung fu and wushu. Wushu is sport,
okay.
Kung fu is art, right?
Let me clarify that for once and for all. So for all the people out there, everybody got a different viewpoint of it. Basically, wushu means martial arts and stuff. In China, it's a very general term, mean martial arts. There are two different schools in China. You got northern and you have southern. Now, you got the traditional stylist and you got the contemporary style wushu. Only difference between that and the traditional kung fu is got more of the dramatic flair and effects. If you take away the aerials, some of the acrobatic skills, it's still pure kung fu. It's nothing changed. Everybody got this distinction that
wushu basically towards sport martial arts.
It is a sport. It's like a gymnast performing a floor exercise. And stuff, you know, when in competition.
Because, you know, you talk to traditional karate people, traditional karate people say karate is not sport, yet there's, you know, sport karate. So I understand in traditional kung fu, the Shaolin monks or the people that I've met who are, you know, from China, they simply say, you know, kung fu is not a sport. So what I'm saying is that, am I saying correct that when wushu is considered to be the sport of kung fu?
It is the national sport of China. The sum
okay,
it up
cool.
for you,
okay.
and it has spread from China all the way across the world to Korea to Japan. Now you're talking about this sports going into countries where normally their art is the supreme art and stuff. It's even in India, in Israel. It's all across the world. Everybody's embracing that sports across the dramatic nature of it and stuff. Now there are some of the hardcore kung fu stylists, you know, and that's why I came from that school, but when I first met my wushu instructor, which is Coach Zhang, I went to Shanghai and stuff, studied at Wu Tai San over there. He said, you can never, ever be proficient at anything unless you open your mind to learn new things. So,
now, did you actually go to China and train?
Yes, I trained in China, yes.
Oh, you did? I didn't realize that. You actually went to China?
Yes, I was gone for a period of time, but 3 to 4 years, nobody knew where I was. I was in China.
Okay, cool. Now, was this before the accident or after the accident?
This was before the accident.
Okay, before the accident. We'll talk about that.
This was before.
Okay, so
before
training
the accident.
In China, did you train in the monastery and the monks and...
I went to Shaolin Temple. That's where everybody wanted to migrate to, the Shaolin Temple with the monks. But I was with the Shanghai Wushu team, and there I progressed from the Shanghai Wushu team to the Beijing Wushu team. I'm going to tell you the guys on that team when I was there. It was Jing Hung Lee, who is now in Phoenix, Arizona, Jet Li, Everybody know who Jet is. I trained each morning with Jet. Now the training regimen is rigorous and stuff. Donnie Yen trained at Beijing. All these guys are famed students of Woon Bin. The same coach that they train with, I train with up under him and stuff as well. He's a world-renowned grandmaster in Wusu. No, there's nobody in the world better than him as far as teaching that art and stuff. Yep.
So that's interesting. I have no idea who and what you say except for Johnny Yen and Jet Li, who I'm big fans of.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Now let me ask you another question. Here's another question. When you started competing in Kung Fu in Texas, now I remember because and I'm not just saying this because you're my friend. I'm gonna say and also his sujino. I'm just gonna say how it is. I remember how if you were really good and real in Kung Fu, no matter how good you were in kata division that particular day, the Kung Fu guy pretty much would win just because the technique was so pure. Unless you had a Tim Kirby there or a Brian Duffy, someone that really, really, really was outstanding. Most Kung Fu guys would just dominate. Now, I saw that with James Cook. I saw that with Derek Cassell. I saw that with Albert Cassis, and I saw that with you. Why do you think the judges who normally would judge, and give probably scores or even more attitude toward a karate guy, why would they just be overwhelmed with what they saw in Kung Fu? What made Kung Fu different?
Well, I think a lot of it was the fluidity, the grace of movement, some of the explosive kicks and jumps. And you know what? And honestly, Gary, a lot of people are under the impression that I won a lot of tournaments, and I won a few after I broke through the barrier of prejudice and stuff with karate judges saying, well, and it's so funny you ask that. I was at the U.S. Karate Championships, and a guy made a statement. He said, man, you are really, really good at your kung fu and stuff. But he said, you will never be a star in Texas because it's just too much karate and taekwondo. And I kind of looked at him. I said, oh, really?
Yeah.
And here we are years later and stuff. And, the times that I lost, I wasn't so much as competing for a trophy as I was competing to show the essence of my art. The winning of the trophy and stuff is okay for the acknowledgement, but my greatest wins came from the people, just like this guy that came up to me and said, man, that was outstanding. It was beautiful, And
well,
this is somebody,
Robert, let me say something with you. I can say this because I was there beside you for many, many tournaments. And the seconds and third places that I won next year, I'm telling you, man, it was pretty amazing times. And for you to be back then when we were going to be 30, sometimes, 20 people in the division, all of them karate, all of them, not all of them Japanese guys like me, but still all of them karate guys, taekwondo guys, and then have you always being in that top three, it really made a statement. So that's what I'm trying to say. I mean, you really did something really unique back then, and I remember it very vividly because I was there beside you, But
yep.
Did you go through a lot of prejudice that a lot of people didn't see through the judges? They wouldn't score you high, or they came up to you and say remarks or anything?
Yeah, and I did. But, I didn't hold it personally against them because sometimes people just don't know. It was a part of the growing process. Champions are made, they're not born. And in order to achieve success, you got to achieve so much failure. So my point was that I was a mainstay in that area because that's where I live, and that's what was available. So I said, well, I'm not gonna go away. So guess what? They're gonna either get used to me and accept me, or they're gonna run me off. And guess what?
Are you turning them to go away? And by the way, we're talking about kata, and we're talking about weapons. But man, you were a pretty good damn fighter. You had some good technique in fighting. What was some of your favorite fighting techniques you hit people with?
I was a kicker, a lot of infighting, punching and stuff. I mean, I will say this and stuff, that people had this impression that Kung Fu fighters can't fight. I said, man, where do y'all get these ideologies from? Martial arts is martial arts and stuff, whether I'm a Kung Fu, karate, jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
I said, they say, well, you don't fight like a regular Kung Fu guy. I said, well, what does a regular Kung Fu guy fight like? I said, my thing is, in combat, I got a saying, or well, it's not my saying, but the Chinese say, I fear no man that stands in front of me. So if we're in front of me and I'm fighting, you got your skill set, I got mine, may the best man win. Simple as that, you know.
When you this is a question I already know the answer, but I want you to tell me. When you fought in Texas, and majority of them are 80%, 90% of people are Taekwondo, and a lot of them didn't know your Taekwondo background, of course. They just saw you as a Kung Fu practitioner and a champion form and weapons competitor. Did they just take for granted that this, you know, most people think the Kung Fu guys can't fight, which that's their ignorance. I mean, did you wake people up? You know?
Well, you know what? It's funny you said that. You say that, though. But, you know, some of them said, well, you fight so good, right, because you have Taekwondo background. I said, that has nothing to do with it, man. It has nothing at all and stuff. I said, let me put it like this. If we were to strip down the uniforms and take everything away, my kung fu, karate, jiu-jitsu uniform, and we put on some street clothes, do you think anybody would know the difference what style we were? Do you really? You know, when I teach seminars, I ask everybody, I said, what's your style on the streets? I have some people, I'm Taekwondo. On the street, there is no style. There is no system. You use whatever word, be it from Taekwondo, be it from Judo, Karate, whatever. That's what you need to use in pure self-defense.
Right. Well, being an old-timer, I got to ask the magic question. I ask all the people I interview, did you like bareheaded fighting or do you like the glove fighting?
Oh, man, you know what I'm going to tell you. You know,
I know the answer. I know the answer, but you can tell me.
Rock and roll. I like the bare head. I like the realism to the facts and stuff.
You're a grabber. Yeah, I understand. Cool.
It is the one legal sport.
You get the palm heel, choking, you get the eye gouging, all that good stuff.
I will say this in compliment to Texas fighters and stuff and everything. Some of the greatest fighters in Texas and some of the hardest fighters. In Texas, if you didn't come to rock and roll on Saturdays in Texas in tournaments, then you just needed to stay at home because there was no such thing as an easy fight. Everybody came to fight.
We had the first pair of grand championships and fighting for first place. I know I was there and I saw you. Who were some of your favorite Texas fighters you fought?
Oh, man, let me name the list. Billy, Tim, Rick Arnold, Mike Hughes.
People don't know. Billy Blank? Who?
Billy Kelly.
Oh, Billy Kelly.
Billy Kelly. You said Texas fighters?
Yeah, Texas fighters. I want Texas fighters.
Oh man.
Billy Kelly.
You got Lightning Sorrell. You got Gato. You got, the list goes on. You got Ray. Huh?
These are all the guys you fought, right?
Yeah, you got Ray McCallum and stuff. I mean, all these guys and stuff, man. You got a bunch of guys and stuff, man. It's some of the hard. And I appreciate a good hard fight, win or lose. To me, sometimes winning is a good thing, but sometimes when you get against two excellent fighters, it's a science of learning from each other and an exchange of knowledge, of technique, and skill set. When I fight, that's what I do. If I got a guy that's really skilled, I'm going to pick up some of his best attributes, and hopefully he'll pick up some of mine.
What was your most prolific win? What was the one that you really felt that once you won it, you said you're maybe not over the top, but you're there. You're there where you wanted to be. What was the most prolific win you had?
Let me see here. Within the state or out of the state?
Within the state of Texas.
Probably the U.S. Karate Championships and the Pro-Am right there at the top. Those are some excellent tournaments
what
that
Pro-Am?
I feel.
Roy Kirby's sport was Pro-Am, and Bob Beasley, when he took over from Mr. Steen's U.S. Championships. What about national competition?
That,
what's your favorite national competition?
I competed in the Battle of Atlanta. I did well there. NBL, of course, I was there with the Grands and won the World Championship in the Grands, and I think it was in New Orleans that year. I'm old, I can't remember all this stuff anymore. But all those were good wins and stuff, you know, for me and stuff as a competitor and stuff. You know, I chalked it up as an experience of just spreading the art more than me going there to try to win a title. Because that stuff eventually, I mean, it's great. Don't get me wrong. I mean, the accolades are nice. But to me, my lifelong journey in martial arts has been a journey of knowledge and learning from the people I've been around and gaining their mutual respect for me as an artist. I've gained a lot of respect of a lot of, as you know, taekwondo people, karate people in this area and stuff, you know, as well as kung fu people and stuff. So, but that's my big deal with the martial arts,
you know,
journey
of learning.
Something
that's really impressive to my listeners and to people who are just listening in. 2 years in a row, she in the new adventure and now famous Kata Wars that we have here in Houston. And first year you actually hurt yourself, and that was a big upset because everybody really loved your first 30 seconds of spectacularism. But this year you really look really good. And how do you feel about Kata Wars and be able to pick out and compete against the very best of the best? Guys have won hundreds of first places before, that concept. And how do you feel about that? Did you enjoy yourself?
Oh, yeah, I always enjoy it. The competition, competing with the elite class is where it's at. Like I said, there's never really a loser in that event. It's like I said, it's a moment of ideologies of great martial artists exchanging ideas and showing their best skill set at that moment and stuff. And you can't do nothing but walk away proud being associated with an event like that, you know. Win or lose and stuff, you know, I just walk away from
each
year.
I'm just sick of thinking that you competed in the late 70s, 80s, and 90s, and, you know, 2000, and you're still, I mean, you're seeing Kata Wars. God bless you, man. I mean, that tells me, you know, one person I really respect and love is Jim Buten. And Mr. Buten told me one time, he said, look, Gary, what makes a person a champion is not how many tournaments they win or how many trophies they win, is the longevity and consistently staying into something. And you've been competing for 35, 40 years plus, so that tells you your longevity of what you do. You know, I'm going to take a little break here, pay a couple sponsors, and we're going to come back. We're going to play the Legends Name Game, where I'm going to actually ask you a name, and you have to talk about that person and how that person has influenced you or helped you or someone that you admire, and we can you got 2 minutes to talk about them. I want to shoot some names at you. You be ready to play that in a minute?
Okay. Sounds good.
Super. Okay. I'll come back and get with you in just a few minutes. And so stay on the line. I'm with Robert Hartfield, and we're at the AMMA, Masters Radio and Pioneers show, that we're talking to this Kung Fu Wushu champion. And that's what Robert is. Robert is one of those amazing competitors that started in Chicago and I end up in Texas, and now, which we haven't really talked about, but now he's a sports agent. That's right. He represents various athletes around the country and sports agency. But we'll talk about that when we get back. But we'll come back to Robert Hartfield. Well, you know, I told you earlier we're going to do a big shout-out. In our first school, we're going to talk about in our big shout-out segment of the AMMA Masters Radio program is the Third Coast Martial Arts. That's right, Third Coast Martial Arts, which is owned and operated by Sheehan Darling McPherson Pagels and Mr. Garrett Robert Lee. His assistant coaches and people that help him are Mr. Willie Hicks and Ms. Regina Thompson, two well-known, amazing karate champions. And the school is located in downtown Anahuac, Texas. In fact, it's the only school that's near and close within a 30-mile radius of Anahuac. I mean, it's the only school around. It's pretty amazing. And they offer karate, sport karate. They offer jiu-jitsu, Zumba. They offer after school program, which is an amazing program, taking kids from after school and working with them in karate, and also a place where they can do their homework and have guidance of personal instructors. If you don't know Sheehan Darling McPherson, she actually came out of retirement and won a TNT, not TNT, a skill championship back a few years back, and also inherited Garrett Robert Lee. As you know, Garrett is my son, but Garrett has been involved with karate his whole life and had many choices and opportunities to teach around the country, but he chose Sheehan Darlene McPherson and the Third Coast Martial Arts because it was an opportunity to grow, and they certainly have grown. This school is large, it's beautiful, has a great following, and please check them out if you're in the Anahuac area and look up Garrett on Facebook, Garrett Lee on Facebook, or Darlene McPherson Pagels and the Third Coast Martial Arts. So that's a big shout-out this week for a school. So if you're a school that can be shouted out or talked about, you can contact us at ProfessorGaryLee@gmail.com or call me directly at 713-483-0476, and we'd love to talk about your school on the air. We also have a segment that we did back in the early days, but I'd like to bring it back because I'm just backed up, and there's just so many emails that I try to answer, and I do answer every one of them. It takes me sometimes a couple of weeks to answer them, but because of demand and because people have asked me to do it, I'm going to start back the segment of the email. So we have an email that we'll answer tonight. It's from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. It's from Adam Williams, and he asks, Professor, will there be creative kata in the Olympics for 2020 as a spectator sport for the Olympics? Well, that answer is no. We're really lucky when you think about it. We've had Taekwondo as a spectator sport, but as an Olympic sport for many years now. And, of course, we've had Judo from the very beginning. So what Karate Do brings to the table for the Olympics is not only a different type of fighting, with grab, takedown, and lots of punching, lots more punching involved other than the kicking. 2020 brings kata, and it's basically traditional kata only, and it'll be mandatory kata, probably mandatory Japanese kata. And so as far as creative forms goes or weapons forms or even musical, no, that's way down the road. Hopefully, they may open the door when they see how spectacular it is and how the mental following will be. But for 2020, it'll be simply kata, and we'll be fighting karate do style fighting. Think about this for a minute. You know, you always think about the person who wins the first gold medal and is on the Wheaties cereal box. I'm thinking about the first gold medal in kata in the Olympics, and what that person's endorsements is going to be worth. Who's going to be the first gold medalist in kata for the Olympics? So anyway, answering that question, no creative kata, but traditional kata, yes. The world will be mesmerized by it. So we'll be answering more email questions on our next TV show. And I'd like to talk about, we're coming up to the end of the year. And, you know, we've got a couple of shows that are really exciting about being planned. Our next week's show with A.J. Perry, and it'll be the part two of the Artifact Show, talking about all the fun, incredible stuff, memorabilia that we've collected throughout the 20 years of the Sport Karate Museum, living legends and the stuff that has been donated throughout the years. And then bringing on Solara Key, the actress and model from under Leo Fong and John Sharkey. And also, Mr. John Woodson will be coming on to the show. John Woodson is the creator and co-creator of the Natural Fighter Awards for the Sport Karate Museum, and is behind the scenes a lot, behind the ideas behind the Sport Karate Museum. We'll talk about his insight. Also, he was a rated fighter in the 70s and 80s. His particular style is called Kyokushin Kai. Then we'll actually end the year on the 19th, with Mr. Goldie Mack, and we'll do a review of everybody that we've interviewed throughout the year. That will be a list of people and a better fun show, Parts Unknown, and mentioning everyone that we've interviewed throughout the year. And then opening 2018, what a exciting this show would be. We've got the incredible Art Camacho. That's right, movie director from Hollywood. We'll open up 2018, and incredible people planned throughout the show of 2018 and all the things we've got planned. So thank you again for paying attention to our show. For more information, please go to sportcrimemuseum.org and find out what we're all about. And remember, the heart of the museum and this show is based on the pioneers and legends. And the heart of the show is the Who's Seen the Martial Arts book. If you'd like to get the new hard copy, which we have some actually for sale now, the Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, or our friends at Century Martial Arts and Fitness, ask for the Who's Seen the Martial Arts hardback edition, the legends. Who's Seen the Martial Arts? Well, we're going back now with our special guest, Sister Robert Hartfield, and we're going to be playing the Legends Name Game. Robert, you ready to play the game?
I'm ready.
Okay, the first one I'm going to hit you with, and you mentioned a little earlier, but I want you to give me an opinion of Jet Li.
Phenomenal. Phenomenal martial artist.
You got 10 minutes.
I had the pleasure of training with him in Beijing. The movies don't do him justice and stuff. He is unbelievably fast, powerful, explosive. I mean, he is Wu Bing's prodigy student and stuff. I mean, just watching him do the things that he do and stuff, I learned so much from him. And he's such a humble and surreal individual and stuff. He's very giving of the things that he's learned and stuff. And that's the true essence of a good teacher. He is a teacher now because he's not doing any more movie stuff at this time and stuff. He is in China. He's promoting a lot of charity work and stuff, and he is training top elite wushu coaches to spread the true essence of what it is and stuff. But he's just a phenomenal guy, man. I mean, he's unbelievable.
Super, super. How about Terry O'Cassell? You mentioned him earlier. He's a dear friend of the museum and great competitor from the 60s and 70s, well, it's early 70s. I have a relationship with Terry O.
Tari is so funny. I met him through a friend of mine named Seth. Tari is very smooth, very intellectual. He's a very skillful and intellectual martial artist. He epitomized the essence of the arts because he studied the history and the origin to bring it to the forefront. As far as a competitor and a fighter, very skilled, man. I have nothing but the greatest praise for him. Like I said, I wish the times he could have came down, I could have saw him and stuff because I hadn't seen him in a few years. But he's another phenomenal guy I watched over the years that I admired, you know, his performance and the way he presented himself as a, not only as a martial artist, but as a humanitarian and a person with a lot of character.
I remember spending time with him at Bob Wall's Roast and asking the direct questions. And he was really the fact in the beginning levels, people would watch him do forms. And they were really impressed with his forms, but they always made fun of, well, can you fight? Can you fight? And that's one of the reasons why he was one of the pioneers of the full contact phase. Not kickboxing, but full contact when he went from point karate, which he was very good at, but to full contact where he really was good at. Did you ever watch any of his full contact fights?
Who, Terry?
Yes.
Cassell, oh, yes. Oh, man, yes. He was a tremendous fighter, yes. Very smooth,
yes.
Very deceptive fighter.
Yes.
I mimic a lot of his moves fighting.
Oh, cool, cool. We have a mutual friend that I go back to the 70s with, and I'm sure you met him after that, but you're still friends with him, and we talked about him earlier, and God, he's just an incredible guy. James Cook, what's your relationship with James?
Oh, yeah. he's now James came before me. I mean, he was there when I was competing, but James was a trailblazer.
Yeah, I met him in the '70s. I met him in 71, 72 in Detroit. Yeah,
yeah. He was a trailblazer. He was defiant and stuff, and he got out there and showed his worth.
You know, he could fly. He had wings right before.
Oh yeah,
Red Bull.
Yeah,
he could fly.
Yeah,
I see him jump 7 feet in the air. Amazing.
Yeah, he was a tremendous kung fu stylist, man. He was great with open hands, weapons, fighting. He was a complete martial artist, complete kung fu stylist. He was like me. He just didn't do one thing and was done. He did everything.
Well, you know, it's really strange. Yep. Right now I'm holding in my hand, I'm in the museum, and it says the master, Professor Gignas, it's the Professor Gary Lee, Martial Arts Museum, Grandmaster James Cook, signed in Korean, 2013. It's a handmade guitar made out of wood, and with him kicking and a Korean symbol in front. He handed that gift to me personally, and I have it in my hand right now as we speak about James Cook. I love him. I love him to death.
Oh, yeah.
He's just an amazing, amazing guy.
He's a real good dude, and I hope he's doing well.
We also have a mutual friend. Tell me about how about Dennis Brown? I know he's an amazing Kung Fu guy also.
Yeah, Dennis was the pioneer of the traveling. I think he was the first African American to go to China under the Wushu troops back in the early days. That's when Roger Tong had troops going over there, Keith and all of them. So he was the pioneer going over there. I used to watch Dennis perform when he came back. I mean, I was heavy into the Kung Fu arts then and stuff. You know, I was still had been competing and winning and stuff. But when I got exposed to the Wushu side of it, I was watching these guys. I said, wow, man, these guys are really, really good. Because they competed at the U.S. and at the Pro-Am and stuff, those years and stuff I've sworn, Gary Tori, Keith Hiribashi, all those guys and stuff. You know, and me and Keith went head-to-head and stuff. He beat me. I had to walk up to him. He said, man, that's phenomenal what you just did. The smoothness, the agility involved and stuff, man. And when I saw that, I said, man, I got to tap into this, whatever these guys are doing. You know, you got to be an open book.
You're talking about Keith Hiribashi. He is now known as Keith Cook. If you see a lot of the movies in stunt work, you see the end of stunt work, you see people, you see Keith Cook, and that's who he's talking about. Who are some of the women competitors? I'm going to mention a couple. Of course, Mouse, Cranston, and Cynthia Rothrock. Who are some of the women kung fu competitors that you enjoyed competing against and known throughout the years?
Well, I could never compete against many of the women, but Cynthia was good. Good friends. I met Cynthia back early. Her and her husband, they're not together now. They had visited my school in Dallas and stuff, and we worked out and trained. Cynthia is an excellent martial artist. She was very skillful and stuff. Mouse was, I never knew Mouse's origin, but she was really Wushu or karate, but she was a good competitor as well and stuff. So as far as that
and
now.
You mentioned earlier, you mentioned Superman's NBL, and we're all part of the early years of NBL. Who are some of the top NBL kung fu guys you competed against?
Bam Johnson.
Yeah, Bam Johnson.
Yeah, Bam
absolutely.
Was good. Me and Bam went head to head a couple of times. It was Fao Phoc Pham. I hope I ain't chopping his name up bad.
Did you ever compete against Willie Gavan? Willie Gavan.
Yeah.
Or was
I did.
After you? Okay.
And the. Fao Pham was a Vietnamese guy. He was really good. His Vietnamese kung fu was excellent.
I
very
remember
precise.
Him.
Technique, very smooth. He was really good and stuff, yeah. That was some guys that were really, really good that I competed against. Of course, I competed with some of the Wushu guys, Ricky Toy and all them guys from there. I mean, like I said, me and Keith went head-to-head. You know, some of the guys was a part of that troop that traveled all over the thing. But
you're up there. Were you friends with John Tzu? Because John Tzu is a karate guy and kung fu guy. He's up in Dallas area. Remember John Tzu?
Yeah, I'm familiar with him. Yep.
Yeah, he's done some movie stuff.
Yep.
Another kung fu guy that was really Thomas Lai? Remember Thomas Lai?
Yeah, I remember Thomas Lai. All those guys. Yeah, sure.
Thomas was my sidekick and my stand-in for Snafu at the Police Academy Stunt Show. Yeah,
okay.
Behind the second position. Now, have you ever done any? Because we never talked about this, but have you ever done any stunt work or any type of movie work at all?
No, I haven't done stuff. I haven't done any of that stuff. I really haven't done stuff. Somebody had mentioned it to me and approached me sometime. I said, if somebody approached me with it, I wouldn't be opposed to it. But no, I haven't.
Yeah. Well, I do want to mention this. I remember a few years back, I can't remember, it was a few years back, and you had a seminar, and it was voted as the best seminar for the living legends. That's a pretty neat compliment, since all the people I have seminars, you know, I have lots of people that come in around the country, but to be voted the best seminar of the event, that's pretty cool. How do you think about that? What did you get was so special? Why did people get so impressed with Robert Hartfield?
Well, I guess I get so involved in teaching because I have a passion for teaching and sharing knowledge, be it karate people, kung fu people. I said, in my mindset, technique is technique because, you know, I was showing some punching techniques and Creed, and I did a speed break with a board against his body and stuff. I said, I'm going to break the board, but you won't ever feel it on your body. And he was just fascinated with that break. He said, man, you got to teach me that. I don't know how you did that. I said, well, we'll get
together.
You talking
about Creed Potter, the guy who broke the bricks this year at the gathering? That Creed Potter?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
That Creed, yeah. And stuff. And I said, you know, well, I said, Kung Fu has afforded me to learn some amazing stuff. And a lot of people think it's mythical, it's TV hype, but it's not. I was in Beijing for many years. I watched some phenomenal things happen over there with guys doing feats with their bodies and everything else, man. It's just unlimited to martial arts.
Well, it's pretty impressive if you press a breaker like Creed Potter, because he's a real deal. I've seen him break, you know, 20 bricks. I mean, the guy's pretty amazing. I'm going to ask you another parts unknown question, and just you know, please just be blunt, because that's the way we are. I mean, we're friends. Producer wise, who is the producer that you think was the best producer that you've enjoyed, and maybe the worst producer went to this tournament? Who's been the best and the worst?
As far as producing tournaments?
Yeah.
One of the best.
I mean, you got a lot to choose from. You got Ishmael Robles, Gordon Minshew, Tony Lopez, you know, Jose Santa Maria, because you went to all of them. Bob Beasley.
I went to all of them. If I had to rate one as the premier tournaments and promoters, it really is top two. It had to be Roy Curbin, and it had to be the U.S. Karate Championships.
Okay. You know what I remember about Mr. Kirby, which I love? I know it was a great tournament and everything was perfect, but I remember that was one of the first tournaments they paid you. Remember? $100 first place, $50 second.
Yeah.
And third place, $25. I love that. It wasn't much money, but, man, we were getting paid to do kata. I thought that was so cool. hey, meet you in the Fort Worth. You weren't there that year. I mean, that the guy pulled up the 57. Were you in weapons that year with me? Were you there that year?
When they did what now?
Remember, he pulled out a 357 Magnum gun, and he pointed it at the judges, and he had blanks, and he fired the gun at the judge.
You know what? I do remember that. I do remember that.
You were there? I was there. You mentioned Fort Worth. I had to mention that. Well, I interviewed Mr. Kirby, and we talked about that, and he said, that guy went to jail. He should have went to jail. He scared the crap out of all of us.
Yeah. Hey,
only in Texas.
Only in Texas.
Only in Texas. Yeah. Cool. Who is the worst producer? Who's the guy that you didn't like? And don't pull punches.
Well,
I want to know. Who's the guy that maybe could have been better, improved?
I went to a tournament in, where was this tournament at? Are we talking just in Texas or all over the country?
I don't care. We're just talking about who needs to improve. We always need to improve ourselves. I want to be, you know, I'm a positive guy, but I always like talking about how we can improve. And if someone, you know, is negative, I want to talk about it and then how we can improve it. But who was the guy that didn't impress you back then? There was some producer. There's got to be somebody. I can name two or three if you ask me. But I'm not being interviewed. You are. So,
I went to a tournament.
And that's one thing I missed, too. Let me tell you, Robert, you and I have a really cool relationship. And we haven't really done it on the interview tonight, which I really miss. And it's a friendship relationship that we can really rag each other a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
And I enjoy that so much from you because I know you're the real deal. I know that you really care a lot about sport karate. But I'm going to ask you bluntly, man. If you had a producer out there that didn't impress you, who was it?
Let me see. Well, I tell you, who tournament that wasn't that good to me, and I know him. He's a good friend. Abel tournament didn't do much for me.
Oh,
Villarreal.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he's been around forever, and you know the amateur organization karate. They're still here. God bless them. But
yeah.
You're the amateur organization of karate, what can I say? So, but hey, we paid our dues. You were rated an A-OK.
Yep.
I was rated A-OK. And,
yeah, I rated an A-OK.
You never won the Greek award, though. I mean, you didn't win the Greek, did you?
I never won. I won everything else. I won Competitor of the Year, but I never won the Greek award.
Yeah.
But, hey, who knows? Me and Greek was real good friends.
Greek, yeah.
You know, Greek was real good friends.
Years. I lost it the first 7 years by 2 or 3 points. People like Chuck Timmons and Cobra Blackers, Richard Cesaris.
Yep.
So, you know, the one thing I really want to ask you, too, is that you're not getting any younger. I know you're over 50 now, right? Are you over 50?
Oh, yeah, I'm over 50.
Yeah, okay. You know, you're a history general for the Spookwater Museum. What's it like knowing that your memory, and for instance, this radio show, this interview will be remembered and as a competitor and someone that, you know, later spoke in the wheel of Spookwater? How do you feel about that?
Well, if I had to sum everything up about my life in the martial arts, which is not over with, you know, as I see some of the aging martial artists over the past few years at the different venues, the tournaments and the award shows that you give and stuff, and a lot of people come up to me, and it's so funny. Troy Darcy came up to me and said, Robert, he said, I got to ask you a question. He said, man, how old are you? He said, it is unbelievable as fast as you are and the things that you still do. I said, you know, and I said, Char, I said, it is. I said, I approach martial arts as a progression of growing into years of my elderly years as a process of keep growing and getting better at what I'm doing. Most people I see are digressing the opposite way. To me, every day is a learning process. You know, it's a lot of people throw, you know, the titles around masters and all this and stuff and have that, you know, and they got this great ideology about being a master, a grandmaster. Yeah, I got all that, but I don't care about that. I said, at the end of the day, I'm still a student of the art, and every day I can get something up and do something better than I did the next day. To me, that's a personal accomplishment, and I get excited about those little things. Not so much the big thing. Those little things motivate me to keep on doing better. I mean, I went through a horrific accident where most people would have never walked again. I can still do my full Chinese split, and you've seen me kick. My speed hasn't diminished any. Age has nothing to do with the progression of the body. It's how you take care of it. It's how you train it to perform. You know, a lot of you.
Tell me about the accident. Tell me about what happened with the accident.
The accident happened in Dallas and stuff. It was in, I want to say, 96. I was getting on the freeway in Plano, Texas, and I was stationary on a down rep trying to merge onto the 75 in Dallas heading south, and this guy plowed into the back of me about 60-70 miles an hour, and I was stationary. The impact was so great, it knocked me unconscious, and then I jammed on my brakes. It was so great, it ripped all my hip cartilage loose. In my hip and stuff. And he said, and the doctor said, man, that normal impact would have snapped the average person's neck. He said, it's good, you're athletic and you're muscular. Otherwise, you'd be dead right now. He said, I'm just going to be honest with you. But even with that said, the injuries I had that was underlining, there was all spinal cord, but I didn't know about the hip until later and stuff. Because, you know, I was paralyzed for like 6 months. A lot of people didn't know this and stuff. So I had to recoup and get the ability to walk again and stuff and everything. But when we found that out, all my hip cartilage was gone. So once I went to the doctor, my doctor said, wow, man, he said, you got a bang-up job on your hip over here. He said, I got two options. He said, I can give you an artificial hip joint, which is in the case, he said, martial arts, as you know it, will be over with because you can't do the high-impact kicking. You just can't. He said, I've seen these photos of you kicking and jumping. He said, you would never do that again, not with this joint. Otherwise, you'd be back in there seeing me every other day. He said, we're going to do a procedure called a femoral osteotomy. So what they did, I had some good hip cartilage on the backside. They cut my femur in two. They realigned my hip joint. So that muscle and stuff had to conform to the new position and stuff. But he told me up front, he said, this is going to hurt like hell. But he said, it will give you your natural hip joint for another 20-some years. He said, after that, he said, you know, if you if it's still functional, you're still good and stuff. But he said, you know, hey, this is what it's going to take. He said, if I give you all defensive joints, your career as a martial artist, is competition is over with. But, hey, you see now, you know.
Wow.
That was the down period. That was a down period of my life and stuff, and I was gone for a while and stuff, and everybody was wondering where I was until y'all found me with this, with the stuff about the Museum of Sport Karate. You know, other than that, man,
absolutely.
I was glad back. You know, so.
Well, you know, I'm gonna say this to the listeners. You know, and I've got some incredible people that's on my board, and as you know, the history generals like yourself, and I listen to them every day, and. One of the things that we strive on is that, I know it kind of sounds kind of weird, but the Andy Warhol 15 seconds of fame. In other words, there's lots of people out there that didn't get into the movies or television or the media industry or even the magazines or had articles about them, but they're just incredible martial artists. And, you know, the people who did get the limelight, God bless them, they deserve it. But the Sport Karate Museum wants everyone that portrayed and lived the life of sport karate. And, you know, Robert, you're definitely one of those guys that really an inspiration to come back to an accident like that and come back as strong as you are, as strong as you've done, to still compete and be seen in a tournament like Kata Wars, and still have the attitude you have. I'm just really amazed at that, and I'm really proud of that you're part of the museum. Now, you do something for a living, which a lot of people, you know, have regular jobs, and they go 9 to 5 and whatever, but you do a really cool job. It's a sports agent. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, I've always been involved in sports most of my life, ever since from me being a young child up, and I always said I was going to either be a professional football player or a world-class martial artist. And when that opportunity came around for me to, you know, pursue the martial arts and stuff, you know, I jumped on it and stuff. But at that time I was overseas in China training and stuff, and I remember my mom had some letters and stuff for me. She said the Dallas Cowboys and the Raiders wanted me to come to camp. I said, well, Mom, I can't drop this to go pursue that and on a dime when I know this is a passion of mine and I know I'm good at this. So I pursued the martial arts wholeheartedly. And it, for me, it's a lifelong process. Martial arts is my life. I love the martial arts. I will love it until I take my last breath and stuff, you know. But being a sports agent is fun. I work with a lot of professional athletes and stuff, you know, securing contracts for them, negotiating terms for them to make their living and stuff, and I interact with them. Matter of fact, some of them I've got to be trained as 101 as sports students and things like that and stuff, but the job itself is interesting. It's fun. There are a lot of rich prima donnas that need babysitters, basically.
Are you dealing with football, baseball, basketball? What kind of sports are you dealing with?
My strong suit is NFL players. I deal with
NFL players.
I deal with US. Yeah, I deal with NFL. I deal with USA track and field athletes that's running track professionally in that endeavor and stuff. I have once in a while I dip over into basketball, but my strong suit is with the NFL. I work for the NFL.
Well, good.
Players.
I'm going to ask you a part unknown question. I'm just, as you know me, I'm going to ask a question. So, how do you feel about right now where the NFL stands and literally not making a pun, but, you know, about, you know, the standing and kneeling and of the national anthem? How do you feel about that?
Well, I'm going to tell you, the context of that whole thing has been blown out of proportion, and a lot of people got a lot of tossed around, like a lot of ideologies. I got family that served in the military that died in the military. My grandfather's in World War II. I had a brother die in Vietnam. I had a cousin that was Navy SEAL. And here's the deal, Gary, and, you know, and everybody got an opinion, and so do I. That kneeling and sitting had nothing to do with the flag, nothing to do with the national anthem, because we didn't fight for the flag or the national anthem. We fight in foreign lands for freedom to have a voice in this country. This is the land of the free, home of the brave, where you got a right to grow and prosper. They talking about injustice being leveled against African Americans. That's what the whole thing is about. Policemen shoot down innocent people and stuff and everything. It has nothing to do with the flag. You know, it's so many guys that are in the military and stuff that said, man, hey, I applaud you, what you're doing and stuff. That is a political ploy with the government themselves saying, well, it's a disgrace. How is it a disgrace when you exercising your constitutional right that this country gave to you and stuff? They threaten you with your job. They can't do that. They just can't. Now, you telling me you picking and choosing how the Constitution should be imparted upon particular individuals. It's supposed to be even across the board for everyone and stuff. But there's some things coming down the pike here. I can't let a lot of stuff out the bag because I'm confined to confidentiality as far as being an agent and things that are leaked out.
No, I appreciate your opinion. I appreciate answering the question like this. This is very, very,
it's good.
I appreciate it.
And the thing of it is this, Gary, you know, people run around here, yeah, we know the world's got prejudice. See, you know, they got this and that and stuff. You know, me and you joke like at the tournament and stuff. You know how I am with you joking. I said, Gary, we don't like black people. And everybody know I'm joking and stuff. This one lady came.
Black people. What are you talking about?
Now, and this is what the lady said. She came to me and said, well, that's not true. I said, well, what is it, ma'am? He said, Gary likes black people. I said,
I'm almost black myself, man. I'm Hawaiian. You know what? You and I came up in a time when there was prejudice, and it's okay to make fun of it now. I mean, that's what we do. I mean, you know,
God bless America, and
what we've gone through. But when people hear us talk, they can tell that we're old friends. But you got to make the humor out of something terrible, and prejudice is something terrible. Absolutely.
And that's my whole take on it. And I tell people, I said, look, I'm not a prejudiced person. I got black friends. I got white friends. I got Korean friends. I got Chinese friends. And I got everyone in every race that I dislike because of their attitudes and the way they come across to people. I said, so guess what?
I think the next award that you should receive would be a tie with you and Goldie Mac. You guys have the two most opinionated, loud voices I've ever had. Most of you guys talk loud. And you're opinionated, so you guys would be tied for that award. But don't change, Robert. I won't. You're a real champion, and you know, I really appreciate you taking time to share with my listeners the part of Kung Fu, which a lot of people wonder. You know, people see now, they see people compete, and that's one of the last questions I want to ask you. They see people compete now, and they have all these different divisions and all these different categories. Back when you were competing against one category and there'd be all different styles of martial arts, but you sometimes were probably the only Kung Fu guy out there. How do you feel about competition today? And people ask, you know, they really make up stuff to get out there. I mean, how do you handle that as far as watching that today, the competitors? Does it bother you?
I won't say it bothers me, but some of it is it takes away from the purity and the essence of what martial arts is really about. And I understand competition is about impressing the judges, but at the end of the day, I've asked some people, I said, let me ask you something. You consider yourself to be a proficient martial arts. How would you handle yourself in a real-life death situation on the street? I see people do all sorts of weapons, twirling batons and stuff, and doing this, and I said, now you do realize that a weapon has a kickback and a recoil if you're actually hitting a live target. You got to be able to control that and stuff and everything. I said, but do you practice hitting objects or do you just practice twirl? You know, it's a lot of things that go into the martial arts, and these days it's a lot of flamboyancy, which is okay. I mean, I don't knock it because I went through that period of competition, but I tried not to take too much from the pure essence of what I was and stuff. Even in the Taekwondo thing, I even hardened my forms with the Wusu, which is normally should be very fluent and powerful, but I had more power. Like you even said, wow, man, your kicks are so powerful. So everybody said it, but man, your kicks are so fast, so powerful. You know, I got so used to competing around that element in order to get the judges to see that Kung Fu has power. It's not a soft art. Your soft arts are your internal arts, Tai Chi, Xin Yi, Bak Hua. You know, what I'm doing in Shaolin is just as powerful as a karate blow, Ishin Ru, or Jiu-Jitsu. I mean, hey. So this soft style stuff, they say, well, it's soft and it can't. Okay. Well, some people you just can't change their mindset. It is what it is and stuff. But the new generation's coming through. they'll form their own identity. But the essence of it, when we came through our era, it's when the martial arts was its purest, and everybody got out there that was performing was about the true technique and fighting and stuff. Like you said, we didn't have a lot of gloves, and then when we fought, it was a war. Everybody knew you was in a battle when we fought in Texas.
Well, I got a serious question to ask you, and we'll kind of end it with a serious question. You ready?
I'm ready.
Where do you get all those pretty outfits at?
I get them from China. I got a source.
Okay. Well, if somebody wants to get in contact with Robert Hartfield, could be Robert Hartfield maybe for private lessons or the pointers on Wushu. How would they get in contact with you? Do you have a website or a phone number or something to get in contact?
Well, if they want to really get in touch, they can contact me through the company site at sportsmarketinginc.biz, because we do promote martial arts from their athletes and stuff that want to compete at the highest level there, so they can get me through that site there.
Well, very good, very good. And, you know, Robert, I'll see you next year at Cotter Wars, and I'll see you at State maybe this weekend if you'll be in Galveston.
I'm just going down to support.
You're not going to compete, right?
Oh, no, I'm just coming down to support and look at the term. No, I'm not going to
compete. Well, good. Come hang out at the museum booth and help me sell a sword or two, and I sure appreciate it. So, again, tonight, I appreciate you spending time with me, Robert, and I appreciate you giving me this moment. Thank you.
Hey, man, I appreciate you having me, brother.
Well, God bless you. We've had a special guest tonight, Sippy Robert Hartfield. And as we close tonight's program, remember always that the Sport Karate Museum is based upon the idea of honoring the pioneers and legends. And if you really want to enjoy a main read, a book that will enjoy sitting on your coffee table, something you can pick up and just read periodically about the sport karate, history of karate in America, go to Who's Who in the Martial Arts. And remember, you can order that directly from Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, or Century Martial Arts and Supply. With that said, next week we'll have the Artifacts Part 2 show with A.J. Perry, and we'll be talking about some more incredible stuff that's been donated for the past year to 2 years ago. And I think you'll find it interesting, some of the fun stuff that we've got collected for the Sport Karate Museum. With that said, well, wish everybody a very, very pleasant evening, and mahalo and aloha from the AMMA Masters Radio Pioneers Radio Blog. We'll see you next week, everybody. Aloha. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Good night, Robert.
Hi, it's Joe Corley with a quick offer for all of our friends here at the AMAA. As you know, we never get a second chance at our first impression. So for those of you who could use some help with your first impression on your Facebook pages, on Instagram, and on your website, we're offering a special discount here from our social media marketing warriors team. Take a note if you can and check Facebook at Joe Corley's Social Media Marketing Warriors page. Take a quick look at some of our videos, then reach out to me on Messenger and I'll be happy to put together a personalized sample video for you so you can see what the high definition video will look like online. That's Joe Corley's Social Media Marketing Warriors, and in your message mention AMAA discount. I look forward to speaking soon. All the best.